Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on breach of contract when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and that helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and for their country. Now, today, over half the food we eat out of our supermarkets is imported from outside our borders. And our food is being produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it is nutritionally deficient. A fellow by the name of Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective some years back by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrom's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package today? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us, well, better yet, click onto the archives machine or the archives page and download it right there, live and direct. georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page and just download that free General Law CD package. All right, we've been talking about breach of contract. A breach of contract is a violation of the contract terms by one party or the other. To give you an illustration of what a breach of contract is, let's suppose I'm your contractor and I come out and you want me to remodel your kitchen. And so you tell me what it is you want, and then I make a few suggestions as to how you can save a couple of bucks or how I can make a couple of bucks. And so we arrive at a conclusion, we write this thing up, and in the process, you say to me, Mr. Gordon, I would like you, when you wire my kitchen, to put in heavier gauge wire than is normally required. And so you may ask, well, what wire should I put in? And I say 12 gauge. And you say, well, what's the next heavier gauge? And I say 10 gauge. And you say, I want you to put in 10 gauge wire. And I say, okay, but that's pretty heavy duty stuff. And I got to charge you a little extra for that. So I'm going to add $500 to the price so that we can pull that wire and we can put that in for you. And so you agree to the $500, and I agree to put in the number 10 wire, and we go to work. Now, as time progresses along, you make your payments, and I put in the kitchen. And then we come to the final payment. And the final payment, we'll say, is one-third of the value of the job, and we'll say the job is $12,000 or something on that order, you know. And so $4,000 is the final payment. And so I come to you, and I say, okay, Bob, pay me my final payment. I'm done the job, and here's the certificate of occupancy, the CO, And here is the building permit, and it's been signed off. Here's the plumbing permit, it's been signed off. And here's the electrical permit, and it's been signed off. And you're good to go, and your kitchen has been built to or remodeled to National Electric Plumbing and Building Standards. And so you take a screwdriver, and you go over and take cover off one of the wall plates, and you say, "Now, Mr. Gordon, look inside there and tell me what gauge wire that is." So I look in there and I say, "Why, that's number 12 gauge wire." And you say to me, "But Mr. Gordon, didn't our contract call for number 10 gauge wire?" And I say, "Well, there's been a mistake made here, and I'm really sorry about that. My electrician, when he came in here, I forgot to tell him to put in number 12 wire, and so he wired it to the electrical standards that the government requires, that are accepted by the National Electrical Institute and by all of the electricians' unions and by the engineering people. And so I charged you $500 more to put in this number 10 wire, which we did not put in, so therefore I'm going to knock off $500 off of the price. But you still have your CO, that's your certificate of occupancy. You still have the electrical permit, which has been signed off, and the plumbing and so on. And so you're good to go, and you're 100% legal and lawful. And then you remind me that you wanted number 10 wire in the wall, and that I did not provide it, and that I had agreed to. And I say, "Well, Bob, you know, you're right, and I don't deny it, and I made a mistake, and I'm sorry as hell. You ought to forgive me, because I'm a nice guy, and on top of that, I'm knocking off the $500, and to show you what a fair guy I want to be, I'll even knock off another $500. I'll knock off a full $1,000. I will pay you $500 to accept this number 12 wire, which is 100% legal, lawful, and approved by everybody, from the White House down." And then you say, "But Mr. Gordon, I wanted number 10 wire in the wall because I need the peace of mind that comes from the heavier gauge wire that I cannot get from this lower gauge wire." And finally, in exasperation, I say, "Bob, you're being unreasonable. You're unreasonable here." And you say, "Well, we're going to have to go to litigation." So you say you're going to sue me. Now, let me ask you this. Who do you think is going to win this lawsuit, me or Bob? After all, on my side, I have the CO, I've delivered it, I have the permits all signed off, and I've done everything according to the law, and I'm 100% legal, lawful, and I've qualified this job for every inspection government can put on it. And yet, when this case goes to trial, I will lose, and you will win. Furthermore, it's worse than that. Worse than that. The court is going to order me to put that number 10 wire in the wall. And that is going to be that's going to be bad for me, because I got to tear all the sheetrock off in order to get in there to do that. And oh my goodness. That's going to be a job. In fact, it probably would cost me more to go back in there and replace that number 10 wire than it would be to just write off the whole job. But it's worse than that. It's worse than that. I could have punitive damages applied to me for having done such a thing. And the punitive damages could be forfeiture of all of the monies paid, all of the monies due, and punitive damages of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on top of it. Can you believe it? So breach of contract is serious stuff. I got to tell you, it's serious. Now, I was talking to a young lady who came into class here the other day, and she was asking some questions about child custody and modification orders and, you know, family law kinds of things. And so in the conversation, she pointed out that her ex-husband had not been following all of the court's instructions, that her husband had not followed the court orders. And I said, "That's good for your side." And she said, "Of course, I haven't followed all the court orders either. And my husband and I are are not following the court orders, and he knows it, and I know it, and so there's where we're at. And I said, well, that's not so good. That's bad. That's called breach of contract. And I said, what's going to happen here is you and your husband are both violating the court's order. And you believe that because he's violating the court's order that it justifies your violation, and it does not. And in the court's wisdom, if it so desired, it could take the child from both of you, put it into a foster home, and then terminate your parental rights, and that would be the end of it. You have to follow the court order 100%, and then you have to identify where he's in violation of the court's order, and that makes you the winning argument. It makes you the hero. It makes you the winner. But your violation of the law doesn't justify his violation, and vice versa. And that's where all of us are. All of us are. You see, all of us are in violation of the law of God, and in the process, we become liable to the penal clause in the contract, which is expensive. All that thinking, it can get nasty, real nasty. In fact, it's already getting that way. That oil spill out there in the Gulf, the turmoil in our financial markets, the unemployment, the outsourcing and offshoring of jobs, the bankruptcy, the looming bankruptcy of governments in Europe, sovereign debt, housing foreclosures in the United States, unemployment, and so on. All of these are penalties that are coming down on us. And it isn't really the worst penalties. This is just Leviticus 26, where God said, I'm going to lean on you, and if you don't repent for all of these transgressions, these breaches, then I'm going to lean on you seven times harder. I'll punish you, he says, seven times more for your sins. So what we're seeing in the Gulf, the outsourcing of our jobs, the unemployment that we're witnessing, the corruption on Wall Street and Washington, is the tip of the iceberg. You ain't seen nothing yet. And already you people are complaining. And so that's why I thought I would bring to your attention the cause and effect relationship as to why this happened. So we've covered 24 of them. We got 82 laws that were in violation of. Out of 133, total, 133, we're in compliance with 51, and we're out of compliance by 82. Now, the fact that we're following 82 laws is good, because there's no penalty for following and practicing those laws. And that's not what God is concerned about. See, there's no penalty for driving the speed limit on your own side of the road and stopping at the stop signs. The penalties come from the violations of the law. That's what our problem is. It's these violations. So I thought I would bring these violations to your attention. So we're going to go 25 through 36. And they cover things like... 25 is New Year's. Every year we get real excited about New Year's. It's one of our annual holy days. It's one of our festivals. And in Isaiah chapter 1, verses 13 and 14, our Creator tells us in spades what He thinks of your holy days, what He thinks of Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, your holy of holy days. So, in Isaiah 1, verses 14 and 15, he says, bring no more your vain oblations. Incense is an abomination unto me. The new moons and Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with. It is iniquity, even the solemn meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feasts, my soul hateth. They're a trouble unto me, and I'm weary to bear them. So, you know, if you were trying to win friends and influence people, and if you wanted to influence this God and make him say, hey, that kid's pretty good, you would want to do those things that this guy likes. Now, if you'll go to Leviticus chapter 23, note that down, 23, you'll find that he has seven annual festivals, holy days, or new moons, that he likes. And if you would do those seven, he'd be just tickled pink. And if you don't do those seven, he's not happy. But it gets worse than that. when you go out and you create your own festivals, like New Year's, Martin Luther King Day, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, when you create your own festivals, he says, I really don't like that. And I don't like that because I told you not to add to this law and not to take away from it. Remember last time, Deuteronomy 4:2 and 12:32? He said, don't add to this, don't take away from it. So I thought, well, I should probably advise you that that's what the problem is. That's the problem in the Gulf of Mexico. It's the problem with your jobs in China. It's the problem with your unemployment insurance and the foreclosures on your houses and your looming sovereign debt crisis and so on, which is really just the tip of the iceberg. Now, if you want to see what the real bottom line problem is, you go to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Starts off by telling you here's the benefits and finishes up by telling you here's the penalty in the contract. So we were just talking about this thing a minute ago of the contractor and the kitchen. And that's where we're at. And we're the contractor, and God is coming in there and he's taking off the cover off the plate and he's informing us that you don't have number 10 wire in the wall, son. You've got a breach of contract, and you need to fix that. All right, so idolatry, number 26. It's a violation of Deuteronomy 5, verse 7. In Deuteronomy 5, verse 7. Let me flip over there quickly. See what he has to say about this thing of idolatry. It's actually an act of treason, idolatry is. So in 5 verse 7, he says, you shall have no other gods before me. Now, a god is a sovereign. We have the sovereign state of Texas. Texas is a lawmaker. A god is a lawmaker. This god, this creator, is a lawmaker. And that's what all these laws here are all about. These are the requirements under the terms of the contract. If under the terms of the contract it called for solarium linoleum, and I come in there and I put in some other brand or some other type of linoleum, that's a breach of contract. If the contract calls for a KitchenAid dishwasher and I put in a Whirlpool, that's a breach of contract. You could sit there and say, but a dishwasher is a dishwasher. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. The contract specifically calls for a KitchenAid dishwasher. Anything less than a KitchenAid is a breach of contract. That's the end of the argument. Now, these breaches can be overcome. You can go to the other side in the contract and you can say, okay, look, here we got a problem. I can't get a KitchenAid. I went down to the wholesale market and I can't get one. But we can get a Whirlpool or a Maytag or whatever. So would you accept something else? And the guy could say, well, yeah, I'd take a Maytag. Now we can write that up and we can make a change here. But we can't make a unilateral change. You cannot breach this contract, which was negotiated by Moses between God and your great-great-granddaddy, without bringing God into the equation. You can't just unilaterally decide, like this young woman, well, I'm not going to follow that court order, because that puts you in breach of contract, for which then you're liable for the penalty or the penal clause. So idolatry is an act of treason. It's an act of worship. It's an act of obeying the law of Texas in place of the law of God. And Acts 5 verse 29 comes into play here. In Acts 5 verse 29, God gives us a little piece of advice here. He says, we ought to obey God rather than men. So if we have a choice between the census taker and 2 Samuel 24, we ought to obey 2 Samuel 24 and tell the census taker, I'm very sorry, but I'm a religious objector. I'm a Hebrew. I practice the Mosaic law, and it's against the law for me to participate in this census. Now, if the census taker can't get that through her mind or through her head or his head or whatever, well, then maybe we have to go to litigation. Maybe we have to bring it to the judge's attention and say, excuse me, sir, but I'm exempted under the First Amendment in Seeger versus U.S. Maybe the judge doesn't understand that, and you have to take it to the appellate court. Would you please correct this lower court judge over here? He doesn't seem to understand the law. Seeger is the law that controls. The First Amendment is the principle of law that we're following, and I'm following Hebrew law, which is truly and sincerely held, blah, 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 and so on. And, you know, by the time you get through the appellate court, I bet you don't have to go to the Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court. I think that your local court of appeals can handle it. But in case they can't, and sometimes they don't, then you might have to take it to your state Supreme Court, and in rare cases, you have to go all the way to Washington. Sometimes you have to take it clear to the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement to get a decision from God Himself. That's what Daniel needed in the lion's den. He finally needed a decision from God Himself. That's what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego needed. They needed a decision from God Himself. That's what Elijah needed when they sent those three SWAT teams out to bring him in. He needed political power that comes from the muzzle of a gun. And he got it. Three times. How's that? All right, so idolatry then, Deuteronomy 5:7, is summed up in the statute that we follow in Acts 5, verse 29. Which now brings us to number 27, which is called Sabbath breaking. Now, in Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through 15, is the Sabbath statute. This is a capital felony, and not everybody, but most people are in violation of this law. This is a test commandment. It's an identifying sign for us that are Israelites. And we've lost our identifying sign, and a group of identity thieves have come along and taken it away from us. And they're called the Khazar Jews, and they live over in Israel. And they have taken our identity because we threw away our identifying sign. They picked it up, and they've got our identity, and now everybody in the world thinks that these are the Israelites, that these are God's chosen people. Now, the truth of that matter, of God's chosen people, comes to us in Revelation 2, verse 9, and Revelation 3, verse 9, where he says, there's some people out here calling themselves Jews and are not. They're not. Identity thieves is what they are. And this Sabbath breaking over here can be overcome by picking up the Sabbath, which falls on Saturday. Friday night, sundown, until Saturday night, sundown, is the Sabbath day. Now, I told you. Now, if you think it's on Sunday or Friday or Wednesday or some other day of the week and it changes every day, that's fine with me. I don't care. I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right. I just came here to deliver a message. Nothing more, nothing less. Here's the message. Friday night, sundown, to Saturday night, sundown. It's called the Sabbath, and there's seven elements that you have to practice in order to practice the Sabbath. You can't buy, sell, trade, do business. You can't kindle a fire on the Sabbath. You can't work on the Sabbath, and you can't do your own pleasure on the Sabbath. Seven elements to doing that. Now, a lot of people observe it, but don't practice it. A lot of people practice the Sabbath on the wrong day. So, you know, if you're going to do this job, it would be real good if you did the job and you say, well, I thought we put in number 10 wire, and I'm sorry as hell that we didn't. It might carry the day. The guy could say, well, I'm not going to burn you here. I'm sure that it was the electrician that screwed this up, and that it was an oversight on your part, and I'm going to forgive you for that. Leave the number 12 wire in there. It meets the code. I can sell the house, and it's good enough for me. It's good enough for the new owner. You can do that. And sometimes God will do that. But, you know, when you've got a contract over here, remember, when you're in breach of contract, it can get real nasty. And that's what we're facing here on planet Earth as I speak. We're in breach of contract, and the owner of planet Earth, the owner of the universe, the owner of all of the people who are on planet Earth is coming back, and he's uptight about this breach of contract. Now, number 28 deals with prostitution, whores. Deuteronomy 23, verses 17 and 18, prohibits whores Now, the word whore appears in the Bible about, oh, I don't know, 20, 30 times, something like that. It's not a big thing, but it's pretty common. Now, whoredom, you know, you hear me talk about Flo's Girls, you know, it used to be a whorehouse, you know, about Mustang Ranch, you know, that's in Nevada. And then there's Flo's Whorehouse, and, you know, you got Flo's Girls. You got to have a madam, that's the lady that owns the whorehouse, or operates it, called the madam. And it's a man's house of pleasure. And, you know, if God made anything better than sex, you know, he probably kept it for himself. But sex, like anything else in life, has to be channeled and used correctly. An automobile is a neat tool, and if it's channeled and used correctly, it can be a real neat thing. If it's used incorrectly, it can cause a lot of harm, a lot of damage, kill people, and things like that. And we'd like to avoid that if we possibly can. So, sex is power, like an automobile, needs to be channeled. And so God comes along and he gives us a number of laws that deal with sex. Whoredom and prostitution is just a part of the law that deals with adultery. So you got 10 commandments here. You got one that says you shall not commit adultery. Under that adultery law, there is a number of laws that deal with sex. Leviticus chapter 18 deals with incest and family sexual matters. It deals with sodomy, bestiality, whores, and so on. All of those things are adultery. All of these 759 laws are a derivative of the Ten Commandments. Just like our Constitution is the basic law of the land. But out of the Constitution comes the Title 26, the tax laws. Well, in the Bible, we have a number of economic laws, tax laws, called tithing. And they're derivative of thou shalt not steal. So, in Malachi 3:8, he says, this whole nation has robbed me. See? Now, when you rob God, that's a breach of contract. He told you don't do that. And he said, you owe me 10%, pay me. Pay me in gold coin. And we said, no, we're not going to pay you. But we're going to pay your rival, the United States of America, France, or Germany. And now you wonder why this guy is a little uptight with us. Now, you know, in most people's minds, this is not a serious matter. It's going to get very serious, very rapidly. And it's going to affect you just like it's going to affect me. But I want it to affect me less than you. And I want to survive this. And I just thought I'd pass it on to you. Because this is something your preacher should be telling you every Sunday. He should be telling you, excuse me, boys and girls, but we got a breach of contract problem here. And you're in breach of contract. You're violating these laws. And this prostitution's one of them. And we need to stop that. We need to get that under control. So if you're one of Flo's girls, you might want to reconsider. You know, I know working girls have to make a living, but there's more than one way to make a living out there, girls. Blasphemy comes into play in Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. Blasphemy. Blasphemy is a little bit worse than treason. Treason is where you go out and you violate your master's law, and you do something that's going to harm your master. It's going to harm your government. It's going to harm your boss. That's treason. Blasphemy is where it's a step further than just treason. It's where you're going to give him the finger in the process. It's where you're not only going to commit an act of treason, but you're going to do it with a flair. Now, that's also punishable by death, but it's a thing here called the unpardonable sin. There's a couple of three things that you can do here. Blasphemy of the Holy Spirit is called the unpardonable sin. It's where you've broken a law over here, Like, yeah, I know I agreed to put the number 10 wire on the wall, but I put in number 12 just to teach you a lesson. That number 12 is what the National Electrical Code calls for, and I'm not going to have some layperson over here dictate to me and tell me that we're going to put in number 10 wire. So I put in number 12, I did it on purpose, and I'm going to stick it up your hiney sideways. Now get your checkbook out and pay me. See, treason against you and a violation of the contract is when I said, well, it is true, I agreed to put in the number 10 wire, and I put in number 12. Blasphemy is when I came to you and I said, I did it on purpose, and I'm going to stick it up your hiney. Now, is that gonna get your adrenaline flowing? Well, if you want to get this God's adrenaline flowing, give him the finger. Just give him the finger in the process. And he's got something to say about that. It's right here close by. So let me just flip over here. It's in chapter 7, I believe it is. Yeah, right here. He said, know therefore that the eternal your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them. And he will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. Now, I got enough to answer for without getting this guy all riled up and come into the judgment. Now, and he says, hey, Gordon, I'm going to pay you. I owe you something. And I want to pay you, and I'm going to pay you right to your face. I don't want to hear that. And I don't think you do either. So it would be better if you're going to break the law. Do it ignorantly. You know, if you're going to break the law, you know, don't stick it right up in his nose. It's called putting the branch to my nose. See, we call it the finger. In the Bible, it's called, will you put the branch to my nose? He asks you that question. Branch, B-R-A-N-C-H, look it up. It's only mentioned two or three times. Will you put the branch to my nose? I'm going to write that down. Put the branch. I got a bunch of programs I'm going to put on for you, and that's a good one right there. It's not very often that you ever think about giving your dad the finger. You know, as old as I am, just thinking about me, my dad's dead now, but the thought of giving my father the finger is so repugnant to me, as old as I am. I never did it. I don't know what the recourse would have been. I don't know what would have happened. I can imagine what would have happened. I'm certain that he would not have passed that by. Branch, B-R-A-N-C-H. Would you give me the finger? Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. I'm on the wrong page here. Oh, here we go. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page and download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. We're talking about breach of contract. While I was thinking about this, you know, it's very common for children today to slap their parents, to hit them. Little kids, you know, 2, 3, 5 years old, slapping, hitting, kicking their parents. And the parents let these children do that. And by letting them do that, they encourage that kind of behavior, which is a violation of the Fifth Commandment, and which then leads people to a disrespect for God in general. And they get kind of cocky, you know, they get on and they make jokes about God's law, bestiality. You see it on Leno all the time. And to a lesser degree on Letterman, but it's pretty common on Leno, and he likes to make fun of and sodomy and bestiality, and Saturday Night Live does it quite often. And, you know, there's a limit to how far that can go, and the limit is where the Great Tribulation begins. And we're beginning to see that now, and our common sense ought to tell us we need to back off. You know, we need to back off. You got the old man ticked off at us to start with, giving him the finger, you know, riling him up. Just doesn't make any sense at all. You know, even if you're going to get whipped and the old man says, hey, we're going out to the woodshed, you know, giving him a bunch of lip on the way out, it kind of reminds me of people that go into court and they start reviling the judge. Don't you people understand that the judge that you're reviling is the same judge that's going to set or pass sentence upon you? I see people doing that all the time, and I say to myself, you know, it would seem like to me, just in the interest of common sense, that you're going in for sentencing, and that the logical thing to do would be to be humble and contrite. I mean, the judge is mad enough at you to start with. He's already bummed out at you because you robbed the bank. Now, to give him the finger and tell him kiss off and that you're going to rob 3 banks as soon as you get out of jail is liable to get you the maximum sentence instead of maybe half or 2/3 or something like that. I see that go on all the time, and I'm kind of at a loss to explain it. It's a behavioral problem that I see that's totally devoid of any common sense whatsoever. Just no sense to that. All right, now, we have a number 30 over here, mentioning God in prayer in public. We cannot do that any longer here in the United States. We're barred from doing that. So if you have a football game, you can have a moment of silence, but you cannot mention God in prayer or in public. You can't mention Allah, Buddha, God, Jesus, Christ, Confucius, or anybody else. And it's a violation of Deuteronomy 8, verse 19. And God told you, he said, don't forget me. And it shall be, if you do at all forget the Eternal your God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day, that you will surely perish. So here in America, you know, we used to on Friday nights, you know, at the football games, where we shouldn't have been anyway. We should not have been doing our football games on Friday night, which is the Sabbath. But, you know, at least when we went to the football games, we prayed to God and we said, protect, you know, these players that are out here on the field, and thank you very much for our nation and blah, 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 and all the good things you give us. Now you can't do that. Now, our Creator told us, He said, now look, boys and girls, don't see to it you don't forget me. We not only have forgotten Him, we have directly and intentionally just wiped Him right off and out of our memory. Yeah, He's not even in the computer anymore. We just wiped that hard drive clean. All right, now, there's a penalty that comes from that, so I thought I would bring that to your attention. It's a violation of Deuteronomy 8, verse 19, and there's a penalty coming from it. Number 31, hybrid seed. In Leviticus 19, verse 19, we're told not to mingle our seed. Now, today I told you about Adolf Steinbrom. Remember that? Of Fairbanks, Iowa? Who uses and practices open pollinated seed, which is what we're told to do in Leviticus 19:19. Now, most of you people live in the city, and you wouldn't know the difference between an open pollinated or a hybridized seed if I slapped you over the head with one. But it's against the law to do that. So when you go into the supermarket and you're buying your broccoli and your cabbage and one thing and another, most of that's hybridized. As a result of that, it is 75% short in protein, 875% short of copper, 345% short of iron, 205% short of manganese, and so on. And you're eating this foodless food, and then your immune system doesn't function. You get cancer, heart attacks, and strokes, and you wonder why. That's why. You're violating that law. You farmers out there that are producing this food are killing people. There's a law that says you shall do no murder. And it's true. You're not just killing people directly. I mean, you wouldn't think of going out here and blowing somebody away with a .45 on Main Street. But you're killing these people by the violation of that statute. And all of you scientists working at Monsanto over there trying to develop patentable seeds, and you're just doing your job, and I don't deny that. And if you're an executive at Monsanto, gee, we're just over here trying to make profit for our stockholder. And the stockholders that invest in Monsanto are saying, well, you know, we're just investing our money and trying to live and do our thing. And all of you are co-conspirators in a crime, violating Leviticus 19:19, which kills people, and it breaches our contract. Remember, we said, that is, our forefathers said, and we're subscribed to it, and we're the heirs and the signs forever. All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. Now, we're not doing it, and we're not being obedient. Now, it's true, my granddad's dead and buried, and he violated that law, and so did my granny. And then I came along, and I violated that law, and then I woke up one day, and I said, you know, I better stop doing that, so I'm pretty careful today. I'm real careful. I don't have any hybridized seed, and if there's any here, I don't know about it. And if I found some, I'd destroy it. And then I work hard to avoid buying GMO foods. It's everywhere, and it's going to be real hard for you to avoid it, but I just thought I'd point that out. GMO foods and these hybridized seeds and foods that you're buying violate the law, and you want to avoid that as much as you can. Show a little intent. You know what I mean? You may be violating the law, but don't give God the finger in the process and saying, I'm going to eat this and I'm going to go out of my way to buy it. It's kind of like going into a restaurant and or like on the food bar, and you go to the string beans and you say, I wonder if that's bacon in the string beans. And so you ask the girl, is that bacon in the string beans? Oh, yes, that's bacon in the string beans. Yeah, good. So you take two helpings. Well, you know, okay, get after it if that's what you want to do. But if I hear that there's bacon in the string beans, and I heard the boss's instructions says, don't you eat pig, then I don't eat those string beans. And I think that'll carry you a lot further than taking a double portion and giving them the finger. So tuck it away in your heart and see what you come up with there. That's hybridized seed. It's against the law. Avoid that. Halloween. This is number 32. In Isaiah 1, verses 13 and 14. This is one of those holidays that God hates. Holy days. It's a little worse than that. It's also the practice. It's a commemoration of witchcraft. Witchcraft. So you look up witch and witchcraft, sorcery. There's quite a few terms used in the scripture about that, where God tells us not to do that. Avoid that. You know, steer clear of that. And if you go out of your way to practice Halloween, that's giving God the finger. If you practice Halloween because that's what everybody in school expects of you to do, that's more passive. It'll still get you killed, but it's not quite as bad. Now, if somebody says to you, Halloween is a practice of witchcraft, which is prohibited in the scripture, it's a violation of the Holy Day statutes, it's a violation of Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, 12, 32, it's a violation of Isaiah 1, verses 13 and 14, and so on, and then you go about avoiding that. Don't do that one. On October the 31st, you turn your porch lights off, and you don't give out trick-or-treat, and you put a sign on the door. We're Hebrews, we don't practice witchcraft. Now, that'll help you a great deal. Now, if you'd carry that a step further, and you would actually practice the Day of Atonement, practice the Feast of Tabernacles, practice the Last Great Day, Passover, and so on, you'd start adding up some real points here. Because this is what our Creator told us to do. If you do what you're told to do and you avoid what you're told not to do, that starts adding up fast. You could come out where Revelation 3 verse 10 comes into play. Let me show you that one. I think I got enough time here. Revelation 3:10. There's a gang of people here. Gang. I call them, you know, it's church, but I'm calling them a gang. And it's in Revelation 3, verse 10. He says, because you've kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation, the great tribulation, which shall come upon all the world, try them to dwell upon the earth. This great tribulation, you want to avoid that? You practice as much of this law as you can. Avoid giving him the finger. If you're going to break the law, make sure that you're doing it ignorantly so that you got at least a little bit, you know, a little bit of wiggle room. And I'm witnessing a lot of people over here doing it intentionally and giving God the finger in the process. And I'm afraid that's going to come back and bite them in the butt. All right. Now, the next item over here is false prophets. That's 33. False prophets. Deuteronomy 13, verses 1 through 5. 13, 1 through 5. Let's see if I can run back here and read that one to you quickly. Deuteronomy 13. Here's Deuteronomy. Now, there's a lot of guys running around here telling you, here's what's going to happen next, and blah, blah, blah. You've heard me mention this. I'm not a prophet, and I don't know. I don't know any more than what I read here in the scripture. Now, when God tells you that famine is coming, and in Matthew 24, he says, you know, you guys are smart enough to read the clouds, and you can read the weather. You know, when you see these things coming to pass, you'll know that you're right on the verge of this great tribulation. So, I can see the signs of the times. You know, as the Adventists would put it, I can see the signs of the times. I'm reading that kind of loud and clear. So, as a result of that, I'm saying to myself, I need to pay attention to what the Scripture's telling me, and I need to get in line. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of false prophets out here. Mainly, they're preachers. And what they're telling us is exactly the opposite. They're saying, you don't need to be concerned about this. Don't you believe that? Don't you pay attention to that. That's Old Testament nonsense. Well, okay. But these guys are false prophets. Isaiah put it this way. He said, to the law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it's because there's no light in them. So when somebody's telling you something that's going to happen or isn't going to happen, and then you look it up in the scripture and you say, uh-oh, God says that's precisely what's going to happen. Well, now you got a choice. You can believe the guy that says God's a liar, or you can believe the God that says the guy that's calling me a liar is a liar. Choice is yours. So, I'm not here to tell you how to choose. What the hell do I care? But somebody ought to tell you that there's a choice to be made, and the problems that you're facing here is that you're making some bad choices. Americans over the past 100 years have made a series of really bad choices. And the rubber is about to meet the road here. And the rubber meeting the road is the breach of contract, and the breach of contract has got a penal clause, and the penal clause is going to be affected. The guys that are in breach of contract are going to be affected more than the guys that are not in breach of contract. Income tax. Malachi 3, verses 8 through 10. Income tax is against the law. If you're paying income tax, you're violating the law of God. And that's not the protestation of a tax protester. That's the information that we get from Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, it says, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You should not be rendering to Caesar that which is not Caesar's, and the tithe does not belong to Caesar. It belongs to God, and he told you that very plainly in Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12. Now, Mormons, they got their act together. They're paying Caesar and God. They pay their tax and they tithe. They pay their tithe to the wrong entity. You're not to pay your tithe to a church. Tithe goes to the Levites, plain and simple. And I would defy you, any of you Mormons out there, to identify a Levite. Go ahead. I'd like to know who these Levites are, because those are the guys that are supposed to collect the tithe. Now, in Malachi 3, he tells us, you've robbed me, even this whole nation, and because of that, you're cursed with a curse. So if you want to know why we're having economic problems, he just told you. You're cursed with a curse, because you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Number 35, sewage treatment and sanitation. We here in America, we treat our sewage and then flush it down the river for the next guy. God. That doesn't make any sense. That's what we do, and we're taught to do that, and we've been doing it for years and years. And you people in St. Louis get to drink the sewage from Dubuque. How do you like that? Oh, it's purified. Okay. Now, God told you to wear a paddle on your belt or on your side and bury your excrement. Bury. It goes out in the ground, where it can be processed by the microbes. That's the proper place for it. It is true, we need to deal wisely with our sewage. That which comes from our bodies is toxic waste, really nasty stuff, and it needs to be dealt with, and dealt with intelligently. But hey, boys and girls, do we need to float it down the river to the next guy in line? Wouldn't you like to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you? So I suppose you guys in St. Louis eat it, drink it, use it, flush it down the toilet for the people in New Orleans. Wouldn't it be better if we disposed of our sewage according to the scripture by burying it on the land? It's a wild new idea, but I just thought, you know, if you can flush it down the river, I think you could haul it out and put it back on the ground. Or better yet, for those of us that are out here in the countryside, you know, I dispose of all of our sewage waste out here responsibly into the soil so that it doesn't end up, you know, polluting somebody else's water, polluting somebody else's food supply. And then the last one over here deals with tattoos, number 36. Boy, this is common. I was over at Tim and Jim's the other day, and I think the women over there have more tattoos than the men. Used to be, sailors all had tattoos, and you'd see some guy, I remember, from World War II. I don't think I ever remember seeing a sailor without a tattoo. It was kind of a rite of passage, you know. Soldiers, you know, do the same thing, but not as often as sailors. At least I didn't see as much. Now, today, tattoos are pretty common. And boy, I'm telling you, boy, some of these guys, they get tattooed up until they've got tattoos on top of tattoos on top of tattoos. But I notice that there's more and more women doing that. It's a pagan practice. Leviticus 19, verse 28 tells you with specificity, don't do that. Now, fortunately for me, I never have done that. And if you went out and got a tattoo and you got one on you, you ain't getting it off. Have you tried washing it off? Go put some lava soap on there and see if it comes off. So you've branded yourself. Now you've got this on, and you ain't getting it off. And God told you not to put it on, so you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. This is one of those breaches of contract that you have to go to the boss and say, look, I made a mistake and I got this tattoo, but I ain't going to do that again. It says, you shall make no cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor print any marks upon you. I am the Eternal. Don't print any marks on you. So this idea of tattooing yourself, that isn't something new that just came about with Bill Clinton or George Bush or Barack Obama. Come on, this has been around for thousands and thousands of years. It goes clear back into ancient times. It's a pagan practice that we, in our culture, our society, were told not to do, and we agreed that we would not do it. Now, you need to teach these laws to your children, because if you don't teach them to your children, then your children are going to go out and be influenced by the pagans that say, hey, listen, wouldn't you like to have a tattoo like all the rest of us guys? And so he says, well, that's what everybody else is doing, so I guess I ought to have a tattoo like everybody else. At least tell them. Wait a minute, wait. In our culture, in our Hebrew culture, we don't do that. That's what the Chinese do, or the Japanese, or the Indians, or somebody else, but not us. We don't do that. Now, it would be a good idea if we told the Japanese, and the Chinese, and the Indians, and the rest of them, now, there's a God in heaven, he told us not to do that. And we're just passing the message on, it would be better for you if you didn't give this God the finger. Because he gets nasty and goes postal on us every once in a while. And when he does, it gets to be real bad. And people weep and wail and gnash their teeth. And that's what our God tells us, is there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. I did that a couple of times. My daddy got after me, you know, and he... he made me kind of weep and wail and gnash my teeth. He said to me one time, he said, son, I can't make you do anything. But by the time I finish with you, you'll wish to Christ you had. So I just thought I'd pass that one on. I think we'll all be wishing to Christ we had before this is over. Hey, I'm running out of time again, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.